It's meant to turn this on. Can you just say all that again?
Yeah, okay. Morning, everybody. Just a couple of other things that Jesus said. This is the biggie. This is the one that we all had to take notice of. But just look at this as if you've never seen it before. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. What room does that leave for anything else? What about all the things that I want to do? There is no room. And another one, which again is so famous. Come to me, all you who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I know an awful lot of Christians that just cannot do this. The idea that in actual fact serving God is easy, it's light. It's something Brother Lawrence understood, the great commandment, you love God with all your heart and so on. And his conclusion was that your life is easy, your life is light, because it's a life of servanthood. And a servant doesn't have huge responsibilities. They're just there to be obedient. We'll talk about that in a bit. That is, for me, that is so important. If you're tremendously busy in your service for God, if your service for God is burdensome, if your service for God is a worry, if you're going around saying, oh, I've got so much to do, there is a problem. And it needs to be fixed. Back to the cook. As Mark was said, Lawrence's name wasn't Lawrence, by the way, a sermon. Like a lot of people, when he went into the monastery, took a different name. He was French, he was born into poverty, he joined the army when he was in his teens, simply because he hadn't got any money. The army would give him a bit of money. At 18 years old, he had a conversion experience. He saw a tree in winter in the Northern Hemisphere, so a deciduous tree, no sign of life whatsoever. And suddenly, he was filled with the knowledge that God was going to do something with that tree, and that in a while, that tree was going to be covered in leaves, perhaps covered in fruit. We've got a mulberry tree in our front garden, which is a Northern Hemisphere deciduous tree. And it is completely bare at the moment. In a few weeks' time, it will be covered in green leaves, and it will have fruit. And then Brother Lawrence saw this as being, for him, this was just something which illustrated to him that God was and what God could do in a human being. And it developed in him a love for God, which is really exceptional. There's one thing about Brother Lawrence, which everybody took notice of, but people did take notice of him, it's that he loved God. Shortly after his conversion, he was injured. Don't know whether he was injured in battle or just fell over. Apparently he was a very clumsy person. He left the army and became a manservant, apparently unsuccessful. And then he decided to join a monastery. He joined a monastery in Paris. Because he had a very limited education, he never became ordained. He was always what they call a lay brother. And he worked in the kitchen for most of the rest of his life. So he died at about 80. Possibly between 50 and 60 years he worked in the kitchen. And that's what he did. He never wrote a book. His spirituality was so impressive that one of the senior people in his order interviewed him and wrote down what he said about his life. And the other thing is that Brother Lawrence wrote letters, whether he wrote them himself or whether somebody else, whether he dictated them or somebody else wrote them. He wrote a few letters, we have some. So after he died, these were collected together, his letters and the detail of his conversations, and they were put into a book, which Mark said was called The Principle of Practice, The Practice of the Presence of God. I'm not a bookish person, I've studied that before, haven't I? I've read novels, but I'm not a great one for reading. I found this book in the Bowes Library. Three things about it really impressed me before I even opened it. That was the first. You can read it at one sitting, no problem whatsoever. The second thing was, I don't know if you can see this, it's got the word pop written on the front. That means it's in the popular section in the Bowes Library. That means a couple of things. One, it's easy to read, and two, you shouldn't quote it in academic work, because it's not been written by somebody who's a kosher, it's not been written by someone with a PhD, and it's not properly referenced. It is, however, a classic, so you might get away with it. The third thing I liked about it was simply the title. I think I thought it was brilliant. Lawrence had a sense that God was with him. Not a belief that God was with him, an experience that God was with him, which couldn't be denied by himself or by others. It's a very practical thing. It's not about theory, it's about how you actually do it. It's a really good a practical guide to loving God. So when I was preparing for today, I thought I'd go through this book and pick the best bits out of it and share them with you. Didn't work out that way, because by the time I got to about page 3, I found I was writing down everything that I was reading. But what I've done is I've actually taken one or two themes that he talked about, and then take one or two of the things that he said about that theme. I think it'll work. So Brother Lawrence saw a love of God as the reason for doing everything that he did. He said, men invent means and methods of coming at God's love. They learn rules and set up devices to remind them of that love. And it seems like a world of trouble to bring oneself into the consciousness of God's presence by following rules and devices. It might be so simple. Is it not quicker and easier just to do our common business only for the love of him? Isn't that wonderful? One of the most wonderful things about this is he starts off saying men invent means and methods of coming across life. They learn rules and set up devices. You know what he's talking about? He's working in a monastery. Set times for prayers, set times for all those things. But those things are designed to bring you closer to God. And we'll talk about it. Come back to that in a moment. The cook says, nor is it needful that we should have great things to do. We can do little things for God. I turn the cake that is frying on the pan for love of him. Why does he cook well? Because he loves God. That's why. Isn't that great? This is one of his most famous sayings. It is enough for me to pick up but a straw from the ground for the love of God. It takes it down to that kind of level. And again, we ought not to be weary of doing little things for the love of God. God regards not the greatness of the work, but the love with which it is performed. God is looking at our hearts. He's not looking at what we do and what we achieve in this world. He's interested in our hearts and why we do the things we do. Okay, second thing. Brother Lawrence didn't see the need to follow particular disciplines or to set aside particular times for devotions or prayer. Again, he's in a monastery. He's going around saying these kind of things. People take advantage of it. The time of business does not, with me, differ from the time of prayer. And in the noise and clatter of my kitchen, while several persons are at the same time calling for different things, I possess God in as great tranquility as if I were upon my knees before the Blessed Sacrament. In the Roman Catholic Church, as I understand it, Blessed Sacrament normally refers to the actual communion items, the bread and the wine, which are, of course, as far as they're concerned, literally the blood and body of Christ. I'm not sure if that's exactly what he's saying, but you get the idea of what he's saying. He doesn't have to be in church on his knees taking up in the service. He can possess God in that same level of tranquility while he is in the middle of a busy kitchen, clattering away. Isn't that extraordinary? Some thought, it is not necessary for being with God to be always at church. We may make an oratory of our heart, wherein to retire from time to time to converse with him in meekness, humility, and in love. Many do not advance on the Christian progress because they stick in penances and particular exercises while they neglect the love of God, which is the end. Brother Lawrence often talked about means and ends, and in this context, I think we'll come back to it in a minute, but he's talking about the kind of things that we put in place which are designed to enable us to love God more, to come into God's presence or to understand God, but they actually become ends in themselves. So they cease to be the means by which we come to God, and instead become something that, oh, I have to do that because I'm a Christian. Do any enlightened Protestants have anything like that? I mean, when I was young, growing up in the Brethren tradition, one of these things was my daily quiet time. It had to be in the morning. It had to have scripture union notes attached to it. This was something which I had to do, and it was an end in itself. I stopped doing it one day when I asked myself the question, supposing I was married, I mean, I would have been in my early teens when I came up with this. Supposing I was married and I set aside a certain part of the time of the day in order to talk to my wife, what would that say about the marriage? No, it's just not the way we operate. Brother Lawrence had a completely different way of looking at it, a much healthier way of looking at it. You're not with God for a little bit of the day, you're with God all the time. He's always with you, you're always with him, you're always serving him. And he actually saw this. He said, many do not advance in the Christian progress. He saw this. A lot of people stay stock still because they are making this difference. They're not understanding this difference between means and the ends. Another thing, this is interesting. Brother Lawrence believed that our faith is wholly dependent on God's grace. That is, our response to God is actually God's activity. It's not ours. The greater perfection a soul aspires after, the more dependent it is upon divine grace. The more you want to serve God, I would say, the more you will realise that your capacity to serve God is actually a gift from God. And what that means is that if you feel that you don't have the capacity to serve God, all you need to do is pray. All you need to do is to say, God, give me the ability to love you more, or God, give me the ability to love my neighbour more, or whatever it is that you feel that you're missing out on. But it is a gift from God. It's not us. It's not about our service. It's not something that we achieve as service to God. We can't do it unless God enables it. This was his view. Love this. Sometimes I consider myself as a stone before a sculptor, whereof he is to make a statue. Presenting myself thus before God, I desire him to make his perfect image in my soul. Imagine surrendering yourself as a block of marble to Michelangelo, thinking, wow, I wonder what I'm going to be. That's his kind of thought.
Not a sharp cut before you're there.
Or what?
Not a sharp cut before you're there.
Oh yeah, okay.
Right.
There's a real, actually there's a strong sense of, as I let that just sit on me, the sense in which you have to get broken. And transformed.
I like the passivity of it, the sense of, actually I don't do anything. God's going to decide how this is going to turn out. All I had to do was to be a lock. Surrender, certainly. Yeah. Sorry?
True.
May I ask you a bit of words? I don't know.
My reaction to that, a bit like Tony talking about the cross.
Yeah. Sense of art among a lot of artists, and it includes songwriters, that is the truth. And Michelangelo used to say that, that the image that I'm creating is already there. All I had to do is to uncover it. And I know that, I think Paul Simon, but other songwriters also have often said the song was there. All I'm doing is revealing it. Not Paul songwriters, but one. We ought, once for all, heartily put our whole trust in God and make a total surrender of ourselves to him, secure that he would not deceive. trust in God. Put our whole trust in God, secure that He would not deceive us. God is a good parent. He doesn't play mind games with His kids. He looks after us. He loves us.
I think a similar thought to the previous one. If I think about the sculptor doing it in blood,
yeah,
that's a different image.
Yes. Yeah.
And that one you just turn to. In and out of people, compassion, he does this extraordinary job around the Trinity of showing that we're afraid of God because our experience of obedience and authority is one of being manipulated or But when in face of Trinity, obedience comes with absolute love.
Yes, yes.
We can trust that we're not going to be taking the money.
Yes, absolutely. Let me just read something which was too long to put on a slide, and I wasn't sure whether I was going to use it. This is Brother Rounds. I consider myself as the most wretched of men, full of sores and corruption, and who has committed all sorts of crimes against his king. Touched with a sensible regret, I confess to him all my wickedness. I ask his forgiveness. I abandon myself in his hands, that he may do what he pleases with me. This king, full of mercy and goodness, very far from chastising me, embraces me with love, makes me eat at his table, serves me with his own hands, gives me the key of his treasures. He converses and delights himself with me incessantly, in a thousand and a thousand ways, and treats me in all respects as his favourite.
For a man in the 1600s, that's extraordinary.
It is. Yeah. But it's, I think you might find similar thoughts in David, in the Psalms. You find it. I think it's truth, basically. This is what it's all about. In the context of faith being dependent on grace, God's grace, Brother Warren has some interesting things to say about failure. And what about when we try to serve God and we fail? What goes wrong? I shall never do otherwise, meaning I shall never do otherwise than fail. If you leave me to myself, this is a prayer, obviously. It is you who must hinder my failing and mend what is amiss. So we're perfectly capable of failing on our own. If we're left to ourselves. But it's God's responsibility to hinder our failing. You understand that? It's God's responsibility, and it's only God who can stop us from failing. If we don't fail, that's God's business. If I fail not, he says, then I give God thanks, acknowledging that it, not failing, comes from him. He's getting a bit deeper. Anybody want to comment on that? Yes, we do. We keep on failing.
Does that mean
it was? Right? Sorry,
I was going to say, what do those moments mean?
The moments of failure?
Yeah, in terms of God's presence.
I don't know, do they mean that we haven't yet fully surrendered ourselves? They are inevitable, that's right. Romy?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, failure is often my biggest teacher, and I'm not sure what it means by failing in God's kingdom or just failing in my own desire to achieve what he...
The second one, I think.
Yeah.
Tyson?
I was just going to say that as someone who enjoys cooking, and as words of a cook, if I fail, there's something burnt in the table.
Everyone knows about it.
And when I don't fail, it's... That's why we say
grace,
thanks for the food.
You think already thank you, Tyson didn't fail today.
Not very often.
But
it's
in that context, it's a practical failure. It's not some theoretical failure or spiritual. These are the words of the book.
Yeah.
He's not talking about something theoretical, it's very practical.
Yeah. that's absolutely right. Brother Lawrence do a very clear distinction between things which are theoretical and things which are practical. He used the words understanding and acts of will. That's what he was talking about. We ought to make a great difference between the acts of understanding and those of the will. The first are of little value, and the others all. Our only business is to love and delight ourselves in God. So he's saying that acts of understanding, that is kind of rational thinking, thinking things through rationally, is not important. Our business is to love and delight ourselves in God. Yet, the number of conversations that go on among Christians, which are theoretical, is staggering. The number of books which are written about issues which are actually theoretical. What's the word? Substitutionary atonement, how does salvation work, all those kind of things are essentially theoretical, but Christians love to talk about them. Is it a good thing to talk about them? Maybe. Maybe not.
This may be again an example of confusing the means and ends. Acts of understanding are because you have an end in mind, something that you're trying to achieve. And when you get lost in getting a perfect understanding of something rather than what that understanding will do for you, then you've missed the point. I think most theological speculations and so forth have their origins in looking for a particular outcome or particular religious obsessions that particular ideas, because we're wanting to be sure that we're really doing what God wants. We want to be having a true experience of the Holy Spirit or whatever, but then it's what looking at earlier when you said about confusing the means and ends.
And I think there's a, because I see it happening all the time, I think there's a, if two really sincere, devout Christians disagree about something, then I'm coming to the conclusion that the truth is somewhere else. If you see what I mean, One thing in that, I think, is, I've been on a limb of this, I don't think Jesus told us that the important stuff is belief. The important stuff is action. And the action is love. I think if you come across Jesus talking about using the word belief or faith, first thing I would suggest you do, and I've done some of you, is to substitute the word trust and see if it makes sense. Because trust is about what's going on in your mind. And faith and belief, unfortunately, these days are often translated as being head responses, intelligence responses. It's just a thought. Start giving it deeper here. The whole substance of religion is faith, hope, and love. Try saying trust, hope, and love. All things are possible for him who has faith. They are less difficult for him who hopes. They are easy for him who loves, and still more easy for him who perseveres in the practice of all three. I know, it's wonderful, isn't it? Last week, morning, Jim, just to settle an argument, how do you pronounce the name of the famous Dutchman, Henri Nouwen?
Henry Nouwen?
Nouwen? Nouwen? Something like that, anyway. The way she said it, that's important.
Like I'm an expert.
But at least you're half Dutch, that's more expert than most of us. Last week he was talking about hope. And one thing he said very clearly is hope is not optimism. It's much stronger than that. It's much more certain than optimism.
I was reading some this week, and he mentioned hope. And he said that hope is placing ourselves in that which is beyond our capacity to imagine. So in other words, it's not
It's not even something we can define.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. No, no, I like it. I do. Yeah. It's saying our faith, our hope, our trust is in something beyond us. Yes, yes. Which is so all things are possible for him who has faith. They are less difficult for him who hopes, who has that certainty. They are easy for him who loves. And they're still more easy for him who perseveres in the practice of all three. Finally, I think, Brother Lawrence wasn't doing all this in order to save his own soul. That was not his motive. In fact, he never seems to have had a sense of his own salvation. Rather, he has just a very, very strong sense of a trusting God. So his motive is not to, I've got to do all these things, otherwise I won't go to hell. His motive is simply to love God. And this is what he said. I walk before God simply in faith, with humility and with love, and I apply myself diligently to do nothing or think nothing which may displease him. I hope that when I have done what I can, he will do with me what he pleases. I think that's amazing. It's not a matter of going to God and saying, okay, I've done all that, so you owe me. You can't do that. God will do with me what he pleases. But the hope and the trust is there. Any final thoughts? Okay, I'm going to